Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, in for Francis. Justice is served for several Alabama corrections officers who murdered an inmate and tried to cover it up. They face 5 to 30-year prison sentences, and the woman who helped put them behind bars also uncovered some much deeper problems within the Alabama state prison system. Susan Hansen is senior resident agent for the FBI in Dothan, Alabama. She's a Service to America Medal winner in the Homeland Security and Law Enforcement category. She talked with me earlier this afternoon about the brutal attack and the institutional corruption that case helped to expose.
The evening of August 4th in 2010, there was an institutional count that was happening at the prison. And most of the prisons in Alabama are set up more as a barracks than individual cells. So the officers go down and one at a time, they'll go and count the inmates and come back up. And then their partner will go down and count the inmates, and they compare numbers. A female officer observed what she believed was inappropriate behavior by Bro Krasmack, a 24-year-old inmate. And she confronted him and caused him to get out of his bunk, and she hit him. And he backed away from her and struck her back. And then her partner noticed that something was going on and responded to it and ordered Mac to go to the lobby area, which she complied with that. Once he was in the lobby area, before that, the officer got on her radio and screamed. The female officer got on her radio and screamed, "This inmate jumped on me down here." Now, by then, the situation was already over. Mac was compliant and going to the lobby, but the way she put it out on the radio, everybody who could, all the officers who could in the prison, started to respond to that location.
Mm-hmm.
The first officer that got there saw that he was seated on the floor but not handcuffed and pulled him out onto the porch. Officers began beating him on the porch. He was able to get up and run, and he was running towards the area where he would have been written up on a disciplinary. Now, he was wearing, because he was in his bunk at the time, he was wearing nothing but boxer shorts, no shoes, nothing, running towards the area where he would have been written up for a disciplinary. And Lieutenant got on his radio and screamed something to the effect of, I'm going to kill him, or I want you to kill him. And so the inmate was stopped by another officer. He threw his arms in the air, said, "I don't want to get beat down for nothing," started to kneel to the ground in order to be handcuffed, and he was tackled by one of the other officers, one of the other defendants in the case, who began viciously beating him on the yard. The other officers caught up, they handcuffed him, they brought him into the lieutenant's office, took the handcuffs off. The lieutenant came in with a 24-inch fiberglass baton and just started to mercilessly beat him, just continuously beat him with his baton until he was out of breath, handed the baton to another officer until he could catch his breath. The other officer beat him also, handed the baton back to the lieutenant, who continued the beating, striking him across the head, knocking him unconscious, then put handcuffs back on him, pepper sprayed him, which woke him back up. A very torturous deal there with the pepper spray, and then took him to the medical unit. Once he was in the medical unit, the nurses started to treat him, but the lieutenant came back in. He was already in pretty bad shape there, having trouble breathing. The lieutenant came in, ordered the nurses out, pulled him off the treatment table by his handcuffs, and stomped his head until he was brain dead.
This all happened, as you've kind of indicated, in numerous locations over a very long period of time, right?
Yes, sir. It wasn't that long of a period of time. It was probably about 20 minutes from the beginning to the end.
Mm.
But it did happen in various locations. There was times where, it was the heat of the moment. There could have been cooling off periods. It was just a brutal, senseless beating. But it had been coming for a long time, I think. I think the situation in the prisons and in that prison in particular had been deteriorating.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that there were incidents of officers, particularly this lieutenant, using excessive force with inmates. There was a culture of cover-up with it. where they just knew to get their stories together. You know, and in this particular one, the story was that Inmate Mac was fighting and out of control the whole time. And all the officers knew almost without confirming with each other that that's what the story would be. Anytime that excessive force was used on an inmate, of course, they would say that the inmate was fighting and out of control. And so this, I think, had been brewing for some time. There had been other beatings there. We discovered, you know, once we started looking into it, that had been either unreported or not investigated, swept under the rug, because the officers would all pull together and give a certain facts with it that were untrue, that were completely untrue.
And so, as horrific as the case that you just described is, it sounds to me like a state crime in a state facility. How exactly did the Bureau get involved, and how did you get involved?
This is a civil rights under the color of law violation. And that is when persons who are in a position of authority, like these corrections officers are, when they abuse that authority and violate somebody's civil rights. And in this case, to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. And the beating that they were exacting on him was not to get him under control. He was compliant the entire time. It was to punish him. And his punishment for the crime that he committed, which was a drug violation, he had his freedom taken away from him. He was paying his debt to society by being locked in that prison facility in the first place. He should have been free from that punishment and that beating.
We're talking with FBI Special Agent Susan Hansen. She's a senior resident agent in Dothan, Alabama. She's a 2014 finalist in the Service to America medals for the Homeland Security and Law Enforcement Medal. The main perpetrator was ultimately convicted of violating Mr. Mack's constitutional rights, obviously a federal civil rights violation there. But how did the Bureau first become involved in the first place? As you've described it, there was sort of a culture of cover-up and corruption within not just this prison, but the entire Alabama prison system writ large. So how did this information make its way to federal investigators in the first place?
The initial investigation was an assault on the officer by inmate Mac. Mm. That was how it was reported by the officers, and that was the investigation that the prison internal affairs, the intelligence and investigation division of the Alabama Department of Corrections, was investigating. Once inmate Mac died the following day, they knew that the Alabama Bureau of Investigation would need to be called in, because it was now a death investigation. And once the ABI was called in, they knew right away that it was a civil rights violation, that it was more than just a state crime. They could see that the officer stories weren't adding up, mm-hmm. and they called us in.
From there, how does this lead to an exposure of broader problems within the Alabama state prison system? Was this sort of the first crack in that wall, or were there multiple ongoing investigations statewide at the same time?
I believe that there were other allegations at the time. And this one, once we started looking into it and we started doing the intensive interviews that we did, some of the officers who were either witnesses or who were involved in it told us about the lieutenant, that the lieutenant had been involved in other incidents, and that these incidents were either not investigated or investigated and, you know, internally within the Department of Corrections, and he was exonerated of any charges. And they were describing bad beatings also of inmates. Once we started to request the reports that were generated as a result of, you know, an incident between an inmate, you know, where either the prison would actually say that they used force or just a disciplinary action on the inmates, we started to find out that there were a lot of these incident reports where the inmate would go to the medical unit following disciplinary procedures where perhaps it would say that they were verbally reprimanded, but they would go to the medical unit and have cuts, lacerations, even sometimes be sent out of the prison facility to what they call a Three World Hospital for treatment. But the reports would reflect that they had gotten a verbal reprimand.
This case, I think, got a considerable amount of media attention, especially locally there in Alabama. The issues that it brought up, you know, what changes have resulted from that? I mean, is the state or the prison under a federal consent decree? Is there supervision in place now to make sure similar incidents don't happen in the future?
I think that it is a work in progress. Once this case started to get its legs under it, another allegation or series of allegations at the female prison, Tutwiler Correctional Facility in Alabama, also came under scrutiny, and a full investigation was launched there for sexual abuses of female inmates by the correctional staff. There has been, finally, we have cameras that have been installed in Tutwiler facility. I think that we need them in all the facilities in Alabama. Tutwiler, actually, I believe the Department of Corrections and the Department of Justice worked to bring in a consulting group to see what they need to do in that facility to protect the inmates and to make it a safer place for inmates. One of the things I think that has come to light with us, and I'm not sure what the answer is that Alabama prisons are horribly overcrowded. They're filled at about 200% capacity, and they are terribly understaffed. They're staffed at just over 50% for corrections officers. So you have about half the officers that you need going into barracks-like situations that are filled to twice their capacity, and no cameras to protect the officers or the inmates. Not that cameras are the do-all and be-all, but I think it would help take up some of that security so that the officers could feel more secure doing their job. And the inmates could have some recourse that it would be on videotape if something did happen.
Sure. There was a New York Times investigative piece earlier this week on Rikers Island that described very similar circumstances to what you're describing: overcrowding, sort of a culture of silence within the institution, and then also a third factor too, which is just a very high proportion of inmates that had mental illness, much higher than what I think we've seen historically. Based on what you've observed in these cases, is that one of the factors that's going on that's leading to violence in Alabama? Do you have a view on that?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the inmates are suffering from mental illnesses, and many of the inmates where we discovered that there was an incident where violence had been used against them had been diagnosed with a mental illness. One other thing that has changed in Alabama since I have been working here is that we have closed down so many of the state mental health facilities, and now there is one facility that is for elderly mental health patients and one state facility that is for those who have been adjudicated criminally insane. But for those who have, you know, very violent tendencies but haven't been adjudicated, there is nowhere to go with them. If they're living on the streets, say they're suffering from schizophrenia or some other serious mental health, and they're threatening people or you see their dangerousness, there is really nowhere to go for them aside from maybe a couple days in a hospital and the community mental health programs. But a lot of them are then committing the crimes, and rather than going for in a state hospital for the most serious criminally mentally incapacitated, they go into our prison systems. And, you know, you can imagine that the understaffing, and I don't have the numbers for it, but the understaffing for correctional staff, but I don't know what the staffing is for mental health professionals working within our prison system to try to provide mental health services, rehabilitative services, something like that.
Yeah.
I think that the mental health problem is a crisis, probably in Alabama and I'm sure in many other places in the country.
I think you're right. Now that these issues have been brought to light, is there anything additional that the Bureau is doing locally to, in addition to the camera issues that you mentioned and the other investigations that are ongoing, to take a deeper look into the prison system and try and root out to the best extent you can some of these more systemic issues, to the extent that there's criminal law involved?
Right, and I think that these cases, the Department of Corrections does not want to operate at this level. You know, they do not want the FBI coming into their facilities investigating this. So we are trying to work with them and offer training to them and to emphasize that civil rights violations are a real thing that you need to teach your officers. It's not just about a lawsuit that may result, but it might result in you being arrested, being investigated federally for, you know, civil rights violations. And so I think this case really brought that to light to the Department of Corrections to increase that training within their training facility to their new corrections officers, and hopefully just bringing the whole issue to light that this is not the way that we want to operate. We have to figure out a more healthy, secure way to operate our prison facilities.